Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Second hour, Lou Prado here in the Sunbury Motors Studio, joining me in just a few moments. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. The bags are right there at the register. The pickle bar, led by the barrels of the dills, second to none. You need to stock up for a big football weekend at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And the Steve Jones Show is driven by Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Lou Prado sitting here. We'll talk with him in a few moments about Penn State and Pitt. But our play-by-play calls of the day, courtesy of NBC Sports. What a game. What a second half for the Philadelphia Eagles, starting with the Philly, a.k.a. Philly Special.
Shelby comes in his stead, and now you got a little razzle-dazzle, and Aguilar's going to throw the ball to Foles! Play of the night. And Ajayi reaches out into the end zone. Coleman is the back with a fullback on the game, and Tevin Coleman, big hole, and he goes to the end zone. Second down and seven. Takes the clock all the way down. Hands the ball off. Into the end zone. Touchdown, Jay Ajayi.
We got double coverage again.
Ryan for Jones, and no. And that is the way opening night ends.
Al Michaels, Chris Collinsworth, courtesy of NBC Sports last night on their Sunday Night Football crew as the Eagles won it 18-12. All right, we'll turn our attention now to Penn State football. Penn State taking on Pitt, 99th meeting between the two tomorrow night. And it is always great to welcome in my good friend here to the Sunbury Motor Studio, Lou Prado. Lou, great to see you.
Steve, always good to be competing minds.
Man, it's a different world. Okay, so there's a great history in this series. There's also been a series of years where there have been blowouts on both sides. And there really was only one golden era in the series. The golden era really was like 74-83. But you found a couple of games that you found to be more intriguing. So what's number one?
Well, I mean, number one is that 1981, the comeback.
Yeah.
I mean, that has to be the number.
I saw Todd yesterday. I didn't bring it up. Todd and I talked about his boys yesterday, yeah. Todd Blackledge. But yeah, that certainly is one.
But you know, that's part of one of my 100 things Penn State fans should know and do with Tide. Any Penn State fan, I don't care if they want the Pitt series or not. That's up. They better know about that because of how it happened, what had happened. There are ties along the way. I mean, I have to tell you one. I think the most intriguing is actually a Pitt one. Okay. At Beaver Field. It was 1930. I have to look this up. It was like 1931. And remember, we were in the de-emphasis period.
Okay.
We gave up scholarships in 29. So Bezdak gave up being the coach, and he had produced a team that went to the Rose Bowl and all this. We won't get to the background, but Bob Higgins, who we know is the legend, was the coach his first year, and it turned out to be the worst season ever in Penn State football. I mean, they won one game, but
yeah, it was awful.
But they come and you got to understand that most of the games. I mean, we've only played about 12 games. I have the actual figure here, but between 1903 and 1931, there were only three games at Penn State. Only three.
That's it?
That's three. And a home game after 1963, it was 1939, 49, and 55. So it's this 31 game, which is what I'm talking about. Pitt was great. I mean, they had a great team who they think was, and I say think because I'm going to get into this later, they declare it was a national championship, and that was BS. Okay.
But
part of their nine. So-called national champions. That's why they crybabies. Sorry, EJ, if you're listening.
EJ, by the way, EJ Borghetti, who's one of the best guys out there
great,
in the world.
Great guy. So anyhow, the team was so good that Higgins and Jock Sutherland had an agreement beforehand that the first and second team would not play.
Okay.
So the third team played, okay? Just the third team. And after, and they won easily. Forget, you know, have to look up the score because I can't remember. I don't have the encyclopedia. Do you remember the score?
No, I do not.
That's the one you don't remember. I could look it up here. But anyhow.
I didn't do the game.
They won going away. And as the fans were leaving, and there were about 8,000 fans here, 9,000 fans at Beaver Field. That's the one that was across from McKee Hall.
Well, it's one of the rare games they played up here.
Right there, right. So as the fans were leaving, the Sutherland sends his first team out, and they're going up and down doing calisthenics and throwing passes and working out. And the fans are booing them. They say they're trying to show us up. And that story stuck for years. It was years later before they found out that they had disagreement.
Right.
Because Sutherland and Higgins were pretty good friends. In fact, year 1946, they actually went on a big tour to Japan together on a special training session. But that 31 game is one that intrigues me. Now, there's another one that intrigues me, too, and I bring this up because this is probably new information for even your viewers, isn't it? I researched this years ago about who had the first numbers on their uniforms.
Right. I remember we had you on the show talking
right.
about that.
And the first numbers, the credit actually goes to either Washington and Jefferson, which played big-time football back then. They were our key rival Thanksgiving Day before Pitt. And Pitt. And I researched that 1908 game is when it was a Thanksgiving Day game, and that's when Penn State wore numbers for the first time. And my fraternity brother, Ted Brown, on the Board of Trustees, had the thing. And I just think that's fascinating. I mean, of all the games, you remember all the games. But those two games, to have something historical happen in those two games.
Right.
Now, the other games were historical for other reasons. And one of the reasons they're historical is, as you said, the glory days. It really was the glory days of Pitt-Penn State series in that 70s, 80s. I mean, it went from a couple coaches, but Jack, when Cheryl took over, but Foge Fazio then came along, but Johnny Majors started it.
Yeah.
But that was, and Johnny, and they couldn't do what he did back then today, put out scholarships, and they won a national title, and they won it legitimately.
They were really good.
They were very good.
Yep.
And Pitt fans think
it earned that national
title. Yeah, and Pitt fans think that, that was, how many years ago? I mean, do the calculation. But the problem with the series goes back, again, I bring this up, is the fact that we don't play them at the end of the season anymore. Even if we played them at the beginning of the season, the end of the season, that's where we spoiled each other's thing.
Yeah.
So coming back to, long-winded way of coming back to your game, one of the games I like was that one with the tie game in 83, I think it was.
Oh, it was 83, and I have a story around that.
Yeah, well, you can tell your story, but the thing is, remember, we were driving and I think it was DJ Dozier caught the ball without out of bounds, and it turned out that the game looked like it was over,
right.
And the fans started coming out on the field, and because the clock up in the scoreboard looked like it was over, but they were actually 4 seconds in,
right?
And Joe sent a field goal. He kicked the ball. Only time ever went to a tie, and he said they deserved it because sent them to play Washington in the
Lowell
Bowl.
Yep.
And I mean, I find that one intriguing. The other one, of the modern day era.
Well, my addendum to that was, I was the third announcer on the Penn State network at that time, and so of my various jobs of being the third person was I had to do the post game show with Joe. So I would go down, I would leave the booth with about 3-4 minutes to go, and I'm on the field, and Penn State's driving down the field. And I remember with 56 seconds to go, there was a problem with the clock, right?
Yeah, right. The problem was the clock.
Right, and that was like 56 seconds ago. So I knew there was a problem with the clock, right? Because everybody on the field knew that there was. Penn State, Pitt. That's why you noticed, like, in the postgame, the Pitt guys didn't complain. They knew.
Okay.
Well, then the clock does get down to zero because I thought maybe they had corrected it. They hadn't. So I go into the area where I'm supposed to interview Joe for the post game, and I'm thinking it's 24-21. So I'm standing there, and I'm waiting, and nobody's coming in. I'm like, what the heck? And this janitor who's listening to the game says, man, can you believe how they came back and tied that game? I looked over, I said, you've helped me much more than you ever realized. And so the opening question I asked Joe was this. I said, 24-21, the clock reads. How does the game explain how the game ended in the tie? Now, I think that's a good way to go. Because I had no idea what the answer was.
Have you ever thought of what you would have asked if you didn't, if the janitor not walked in? Have you ever?
Some of the media, because the media people would have come in ahead of time. They would have said something. But that's how I find out. Guy was wearing headphones on, listening to a transistor radio. 1983, you still had transistors. You didn't have a Walkman at that point. So yes, that's my story. I'm sticking to it.
Okay, one of the games in the '78 game. Do you remember that one? They were
Joe kicked off to start the game, and he kicked off to start the second half because he had the wind was coming out of the north and was so ferocious. He pinned Pitt back in the third quarter. That entire because he kicked off, he elected to kick off.
And remember they eventually played for the national championship in a famous Alabama game, which we all are sick over. But one of the reasons I'm fascinated by that game is because of what Chuck Fucina did. They were coming down, and it looked like late in the game, and they were going to come from behind, and they had to clinch the game. It looked like it was fourth down and inches to go, and what happened was that it actually looked longer when it went
right.
And so Fucina went out and told him it was only inches.
Yeah, no, he told Joe, like, we only need a foot.
It's like a yard or something.
Yeah, I talked to Chuck about this at the Duquesne Club last year. He says, I'm not a math major.
But, I mean, you know, you could go on and on, but those are two of the ones. Yeah. Now, there's one game I have to tell you that you know, 63, you weren't even born yet, were you?
I mean, I was born in 63.
No, 64, rather. In 64, when they had that team that lost the first three games, and then they came from behind Glenn Ressler's team, and they beat Ohio State in a great upset. And the end of the year, they played Pitt, and they beat Pitt. Mm-hmm. But it was that game. It was played at Penn State, at Beaver Stadium. And it was wind chill was zero.
Oh, brutal.
It snowed in a day, and you know people left the game. I forget 21-0, maybe whatever the score was. I can't remember the exact score. What I remember is I'm up in the press box covering the game. And my poor wife sitting in the car freezing.
Well, that was the '78 game. I brought Kathy with me to the game, and like she's like, I don't think we could stay much longer.
But you know, so many of those games were played in cold weather. What made the series great, though, even before the era of the '70s, was that there was always upsets. Pitt upset us in. I know people say, "What is Lou proud of?" 1940 and 1948, we had a chance to go to bowl games, and we lost to Pitt in upsets.
Right.
And that's what they love to do, and that's what makes a series. I mean, you know, they bragged about. Narduzzi was bragging about how, you know, they kept us out of the playoffs 2 years ago. And we know technically they may have, but technically there was a lot of politics. And the Michigan game kept us out of the politics.
I will say this about that claim. While I do understand him saying it, when it came time in the week, 10 days leading up, what was brought up over and over and over again? The fact that Penn State lost to Michigan at Michigan by 39. The Pitt game was never brought up by anybody, ever. It was the margin that they lost to Michigan by.
And that's what goes on. And, if Penn State happens to lose Saturday, you know, they'll be bragging and complaining about it. And
sure.
Who knows? But I've sort of lost my passion for it all because it's all turned into – one of the things I don't like is the fact that the students – Pitt students still have that in that when they sing in the alma mater and they still throw out the worst. Anybody goes to the crowd, anybody going to the game on Saturday better be prepared for some of the nastiness, okay? Most of the fans are, some of the fans are good, but there are a lot of them are nasty. I mean, look what happened when that guy, they trace it down to a Pitt guy who threatened to blow up the stadium.
Right.
That's idiotic that happens that time. But, you know, I mean, I have to tell you that there would be a series if Pitt had allowed Penn State into the Big East way back when. Okay, 1980s?
Mm-hmm.
You know the story?
Sure, I know the story because I talked to Joe a lot about this because I interviewed Joe about it at the time. Joe tried to put together an all-sports Eastern Conference, and he was hoping to put into it Pitt, West Virginia, Temple, Boston College, Syracuse, Rutgers, and he had a thought in his mind that they could convince Maryland to be the eighth school. He had a pretty good avenue to get the winner of the conference, get an automatic bid to the Fiesta Bowl. I mean, this is how far along he'd worked. And Syracuse, Jay Crotthamel was the athletic director at Syracuse, and the Big East, again, this is where you had two great visionaries in one room. And we don't have a lot of – we are not in an era of visionaries.
No,
right,
you're right.
Okay, we are not in a people that see big picture and so forth. I mean, it's kind of like being in the Truman Show where the kid says he wants to be an explorer and the teacher pulls down the map and says everything's been discovered. So, I mean, that's where we are now. Everything's discovered. Nothing's new. So Dave Gavitt had already come up with the idea of the Big East, right, in 1979. Dave Gavitt was a visionary. I mean, Dave Gavitt understood. Because you and I both saw ECAC this, ECAC that, and it meant nothing
right
back then. Zero. And so Dave Gavitt gets the Big East together in 79. He's got a not a good idea. He's got a great idea, right? That includes schools in Washington, New York, Boston, Philadelphia, right? Brilliant. Okay. So they start. And Syracuse Boston College are two of them. Well, now Joe's talking to him about this football deal. So Jake Krauthammel gets together with, I'm trying to remember the BC athletic director's name at the time. But they then talk to Pitt about joining the Big East.
Right.
And I want to see Dean Billick was the athletic director.
Bingo.
At Pitt at the time. And so they joined the Big East. Then Joe met with Dave Gavitt at Bradley International Airport in Windsor Locks, Connecticut, which is the Hartford Airport. That's where they met. They sat down, and Joe talked about this. He says, okay, well, if this doesn't work out for them, can I get Penn State basketball into the Big East? And Gavitt was noncommittal. He said, hey, I can put it up for a vote. And Trangese said, well, he says, I don't know. He said, we ought to really think about this. Because Trangese could see the problem of Penn State. He could see it. And so when they put it up to a vote, all the football schools voted yes, but all the basketball-only schools voted no, and Penn State lost. Okay? So then Pitt has it everything their own way. They've got the Big East. It's going great, great, great. Right? Right. Because basketball is a great move. And then in 1989, on December 20th, you're going to the Big Ten? What? You're in the Big Ten. And then it forced the Big East to form a football league, not a conference. Okay, you are a conference when everybody plays every sport. Okay? The Big East was a league, not a conference. Okay, you had eight schools that played basketball and you had a bunch that played football and basketball. Did it last? No, it didn't last because they couldn't keep it together. They were a league.
What intrigued?
And again, this is because everyone talks about, they don't play, it's all Penn State's fault. No, you made the decision and you made your own bed, now live with it.
Well, I want to follow up on that. Dean Billick is a Penn Stater.
Yeah.
And Dean Billick, we had dinner, several of us Penn Stadia guys, old guys, had dinner after the game at Pittsburgh last, and Dean admitted, he was the one who said, turned down Penn State to be football. I mean, that's where they could have. He could have taken Pitt into the football back then.
Yep.
And here's Dean Billick, who was a Penn Stater, got the job and as a worked for the CDT for a while. Got the job at Pitt as a PR guy, assistant PR guy.
Right.
Jim Tarman helped him get the job.
Yep.
And he turns out to stab us in the back, which certainly sounds like the current Board of Trustees, we won't go there.
No,
we won't go there.
I'm not going to go there. But yeah, I mean, it was a bad business decision by them. Okay, now the next bad business decision they made was building the Peterson Center on top of the football stadium.
A lot of Pitt people believe that now too, because they don't. A lot of them are advocating they should add their own stadium.
Right now. The Peterson Center is a gorgeous facility. That's as fine a basketball facility as I've been in. But you can build it over there. There's land over there. They tore the football stadium down. Now you get 12 minutes to tailgate after the Pirates game.
I know. That's tailgating has become part of the atmosphere. I mean, around college football, when you can't do it much. I mean, it's just. And yeah, I mean, I find that we've made some pretty dumb decisions too. Penn State's made some over the years.
Oh, no doubt. No, I mean, no doubt about it.
Lou, I'm going to keep you here for the next half hour, okay? And then we'll come back and we'll talk more about this because obviously there's a fascinating history. There's a couple of games I know you want to get into in the final half hour, which we will do. Today's show is brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports domestic microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar is indeed second to none. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
If you want to have a fun day and have less than perfect credit, you have to drive a Hyundai from Sunbury Motors Hyundai. Sunbury Motors Hyundai has 17 2018 Hyundai Elantras picked out for anyone who has less than perfect credit. Every new Hyundai comes with a 10-year, 100,000-mile bumper-to-bumper warranty and Hyundai Assurance. Sunbury Motors Hyundai will work hard to get you approved on a brand new Hyundai Elantra. Bankrupt, divorced, slow pay should not be an issue at Sunbury Motors Hyundai. Why settle for a used vehicle when you can bring your bruised credit to Sunbury Motors Hyundai? 17 2018 Hyundai Elantras picked out for anyone who has less than perfect credit. If you want to have a fun day and have less than perfect credit, you have to drive a Hyundai from Sunbury Motors Hyundai. Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the black building on North 4th Street in Sunbury. 17 2018 Hyundai Elantras picked out for anyone who has less than perfect credit. If you want to have a fun day and have less than perfect credit, you have to drive a Hyundai from Sunbury Motors Hyundai.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Lou Prado rejoins us. Lou, there are a couple games you wanted to get into.
Yeah, I'm
gonna. Right, how did the ugliness?
Yeah, the ugliness started actually. You know, I've been to four, and it's pretty nice story. You know, the first game in 1893, they were supposed to play on Saturday, and it rained and poured, and they dedicated Beaver Field, and so they postponed till Monday, and the players invited. Speaking about fraternities, they invited them to the fraternities, and they all got smashed and had a great time. And they went out Monday and beat them. But reason why is the coach at the time, and otherwise the coach we know is George Hoskin. He was really a trainer, and he played in the games. And this is, you know, they did that back then. Well, the next thing they played in 1896, Hoskin's on the other side. He went to Pitt. So that started he was nasty. I mean, the newspapers wrote about it. And that's how it started and became nasty. But you know, at that point, Bucknell was maybe more of a rival than anybody else. But you know, they didn't start playing at Pitt Stadium in 1925. So a lot of these games, Forbes Field or Exposition Park. But there were a couple games that I wanted to go as we went through. There were a couple games that I the 1919 game when we beat them for the first time.
And Hugo Bestek would be the coach.
Yeah,
right?
beat him for the first time in a while, and then we didn't beat him again until 1939. In 1919, Bob Higgins was basically an end. They wouldn't call him a tight end, and he took a pass on a fake punt and went 90 some yards, 92 yards. It's part of the record.
It is
longest pass reception, and that won the game. And then in 1939, Pitt had a pretty good team. I think they were defending national champions. At least they claimed them national champions. And I'll get to that shortly, whether they were or they were not. And Leon Kajeki, who you knew, remember mm-hmm. that? Great guy, passed away a few years ago.
He did. He was the oldest living Penn State letterman, and he used to be at the tavern every Friday night.
And he was the sixth all-time letterman, all-time All-Americans. He was the sixth. We hadn't had one since, I think it was Joe Bedink when he was a player in the 22. So Kajeki was very good. He never played in the pros because he went into the oil industry, as you know.
Right.
But he was a great guy. But I want to briefly about the 36 game, and it's not what happened in the game. Penn State was actually getting beat 14-0, eventually lost 34-7. But this was in the second half kickoff. We had a guy, Harry, his nickname was Harry, sophomore named Harry Harrison, and he was a sophomore. And as Harry Harrison is running down the field, he was clear in the midfield when an elastic from his pants came down and they fell down, and he tripped and fell down. That's a true story, okay? Rich Riley wrote about this in his book, okay? That was a – forgot to mention, and this was a great game, and I remember listening to it on the radio on Monday because it was supposed to be on Saturday, 1950. And an unexpected snowfall. The team had come down. They hadn't been told there was going to be a big snowstorm. It turned out to be like a 23 inches of snow. I happened to break my leg in snow that year back in Indiana, PA. I'm a big Pitt fan, and wound up in a cast. That's one of the things I remember. But they turned around, and because they canceled the game at Pitt Stadium, they turned around and Army trucks took them back. To Tyrone, and they took a train to get back here. But then they went. Then they played on the 7,000 showed up on when they played on Monday, and the Steelers had played earlier, and the game went down to 21 to nothing. The final was Pitt rallied for a 21-20 win. Statewide rallied for a 21-20 win. Sorry. The mind goes sometimes in the middle. But that turned out to be, you know, one of those really unusual games. And one of the things that Rip Ingle talked for years, he lost his wallet in the snow going from the hotel.
Oh, jeez.
Here's the thing that I really wanted to get into. Pitt claims they have 9 national champions.
Yes.
Well, in reality, they have 3.
Right.
They have the 1976 one.
Yep, which great team, Matt Cavanaugh and Tony Dorsett.
That was legitimate.
Elliot Walker.
Yep. In 1916 and 1918 under Pop Warner, they were national champions. They actually had the most votes by people that were picking in 1916. Yep. And in 1918, Michigan had a share of that. But the reason why they claim 9 is because historians have gone back and then – looked at the schedules, looked at the teams,
right,
and then they've selected the champions. There's one guy named Park Davis who was a sports writer. And sports writers were big. Remember, they didn't have radio, TV. He was magazines and that. And Park Davis in 1933 went back and looked at champions beforehand, and he gave Pitt a champion in 1915, in 1929, and 1931. Okay?
Oklahoma State, remember, they got a championship out of this. Oklahoma State actually did like in 1946 or 44 or something like that.
Yeah, so let me go on because this is why it's interesting. Anybody goes to the NCAA record books, and I hate to say NCAA record because I hate the NCAA so much with the Penn State, but let's go on. In 1915, actually Cornell was the national champion by most schools. Right. In 1929, Notre Dame had most of the votes for national champion. In 1931, actually USC was almost unanimous. And in 1934, Michigan was almost unanimous. And those are the ones they claim. Then there's something called the Football Thesaurus Holgate System, Illustrated Annual Football. Mm-hmm. And they got that in 1930. They claimed that in 36 and 37 when they shouldn't even add 36 because 36 when the AP poll started. Minnesota was the champion in both 1936 and 37. So Pitt claimed, this is the crybabies, claiming that they were the national champions. Mm-hmm. But they've only had, we have so many national champions over Penn State. We have 2, and we got screwed out of 1 in 94. I mean, let's face it. So it's like when I hear them talk about it, it's like now we go back there and there's a National Football Foundation which gave Penn State 2 national champions. We never claimed it.
There's actually 5 altogether.
But you know there were 5. What were the other ones?
Five that Penn State could have, doesn't have, that were recognized by one organization or another.
The 94 wasn't it?
94 was recognized. 69 was recognized. 81 was recognized, even though Clemson was undefeated. It was obvious who they were, but like some computer service, whatever. And then 11 and 12.
Well, so
five have been recognized by somebody.
If we wanted to claim, we could claim.
Right, and have not.
Claim this, Pitt. Yeah. You're not the national champions of 99.
I mean, under the Pitt system, Penn State has 7 national championships. Again, 11, 12, 69, 81, 94, all some organization somewhere Yeah, and this is not from the research you did. This goes back before they did this.
Before they did that.
Before they did this. So this goes back, and I'm talking like, I went back and looked this up back in the 90s. So that's how far back this goes. There's five others that Penn State could claim if they wanted.
Well, come on, Sandy, if you're listening, let's claim them. You know, hey, you know, at this point, it doesn't really matter. But still, it's part of this whole, you know, go back to the whole part of this whole Pitt Penn State series. You know, one of the things talk about sometimes the Penn State people who turn against Penn State. It seems like there are a lot of Pittsburgh writers who went to Penn State who, when once they get to Pittsburgh, man, their birthright goes to Pitt. Oh, you had Adam Bittner on yesterday, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you play to the crowd.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I read his story. He was a nice kid, but he was a collegiate guy, and he wrote a story about how, you know, we should be playing all that and Penn State's wrong. John Steiger wrote a read on him. Jay Paterno had a nice piece, and if you saw it,
I have not seen Jay's.
Yeah, he said, you know, it's just too bad. That's the way college football is these days. You know, it's all changed, but business and all the stuff. But you know, most of the people aren't being realistic about that whole thing. That's.
Well, again, I go back to look. I mean, everybody makes mistakes, but Pitt made a bad business move in 1981. Now, basketball wise, for 30 years, was it the right move? Yes, no question. So I'll give credit where credit is due. But see, what they didn't see in 1981, this is where Joe Paterno, being a member of the College Football Association Executive Committee with Chuck Nienas, and Chuck Nienas was another visionary. Again, we're out of visionaries right now. Okay, we're all out. Okay, the people that could see what might happen, because Nienas and Joe were on the TV committee, they understood that the TV part of college football was about to explode if they won the Supreme Court case with Oklahoma and Georgia. They knew it. They had, in fact, they had a contract with NBC all set to go. And then the Supreme Court was delayed in ruling on Oklahoma and Georgia, so they finally then had to put a new contract together. But in 81, they had a TV contract to go with NBC.
Steve, you know this too, and the younger people don't, because one of the reasons the Pitt-Penn State football series was so tense and great was not just because of those games, but because it was tense in basketball.
Yes.
It was tense in baseball.
Yep.
It was tense in wrestling.
Yep.
I mean, the small amount of sports we had back in the 50s and the 40s, you know, yeah. 7, 8, 9 sports versus the 31, no women's sports at the time.
Right.
That's where the Doc Carlson games against the coach before the 54 team that became a professor then. He was our longtime the old guy. He's gone too. Yeah. But he invented the zone defense.
John Locke.
Yeah, John Locke.
Yeah.
Now those were the freeze and all that. You know, people would not realize what it was like, a 5-0 going into the second half or something like that. And the game is different. We know that back
then.
But they were
5-0 in basketball.
But they were and the wrestling. I mean, the Rex Perry when he was the coach, I remember, and Charlie Spidell. And then Joe Badink and the baseball people. But that helped make the football series even more intense, because they were winning the games, and all the games were at Pittsburgh. Do you remember why all the games were at Pittsburgh in that time period?
Well, because most of them were at Forbes Field. Let's start with, because not even in Pitt Stadium, they were Forbes Field.
Pitt Stadium started in 25. But, right. Why were they there? Okay.
I thought part of it was because Penn State wanted to recruit down there.
Exactly. There were a lot of alumni in Pittsburgh area, including Casey Jones, who was Bob Higgins' best friend, who really brought the program back when they bent the rules to bring players in from the coal mines and gave them jobs and all that type. So they really did get them jobs. And that's what brought Higgins back. But the alumni wanted a game in Pittsburgh, because they wanted for the fans and they wanted for help recruiting. And so they got the game, and they decided, okay, we'll play every year. We have a game occasionally at Penn State, which they did in 31. Yeah. But that's why the games were there. I mean, it was, you know, so when the Pitt fans came, we can't have home and home. Well, we did it for a long time. It's now your turn. I'm speaking on behalf of Rich Riley and Casey Jones and guys up there. The heck with you. You know what I mean? It's just like, I mean, I'm joking, obviously, but it's true. I mean, what happens when old guys like me are gone? They don't even remember this type of stuff. They're not even going to care. I mean,
Well, see, what's happened is that one side's kind of had it their own way for a long period of time. And they're really, because all those games were down in Pittsburgh. And they had some really good teams. Jock Sutherland, no matter how many
great team.
Real or faux national championships they had, he had a lot of really good teams there. So let's give credit where credit's due. But they had everything their own way, played essentially at home the entire time, and part of that Penn State agreed to, right? And then when it came to the Big East, they were in that. That's going to – and all of a sudden in 89, when Penn State got in the Big Ten, that was the first time they lost control of the whole thing. And part of it is they decided in 81 not to do this. Now, it's always overlooked when anybody writes an article in Pittsburgh about 1981. Pitt made its choice. Well, when you make your choice, now you've got consequences potentially down the road. Sometimes there are none. Sometimes there are some. Well, one of the consequences is like Penn State's too busy. Okay, they got 9 conference games. I can't play it.
That's part of what Jay wrote. He says if you want to play the game, then you have to have less.
You have to have 8 conference games. See, and that's where the ACC and the SEC, they both have 8 conference games.
Right, that's what makes the point.
Because let's give Pitt credit. Pitt, for example, the last 2 years, they've played Penn State and Oklahoma State as their non-conference games. Well, that's a heck of a non-conference schedule. Man, now you're talking about 2 of the top 10 teams in the country on your non-conference schedule. They had the flexibility to do that and then schedule, I think it was last year, I want to say it was Villanova last year.
Yeah.
And I can't remember who their 4th non-conference game. But you can then schedule down those 2 because you scheduled way up on your other 2. Well, in the Big Ten, you can't do that. You really don't have that kind of flexibility because, you know, you and I know they need 7 home games financially. And then you want to be tested, whether it's Virginia Tech, Auburn, West Virginia, in that other game. They've got that.
And you know, if we don't live in Pittsburgh, so we don't know what the Penn State fans go through down there. We hear what our friend Ron Moeller says.
Mole man tells me a lot.
And he doesn't hold back what he says. But he gets tired of hearing it all down there. You know? Yeah. He has to live through that type of stuff, which he hears it day in, day out. But, in many ways it's too bad. But as they say, football's changing. Who knows what it's going to be 5 years from now? We don't know. Something else could change.
Oh,
you know, I mean,
2025, when the grant of rights runs out for the Big 12, do we see another free for all? And then suddenly you have 16 schools, and maybe a Pitt is a part of the Big 10, or maybe it's Texas, or maybe it's Oklahoma, or maybe it's nobody. We don't know. That's 8 years from now. At that point, I mean, he'll be a grizzled veteran, and
you can come visit my grave.
I'm grizzled already. I'm just not a veteran at the moment.
Yeah. He's grizzled already. And what's the reason why? Because he works with me. All right. I seem to create that in everybody, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'll see you down there. Well, I may not see you. Only tailgating 3 minutes, so.
Yeah. Oh, it's down to 3? I'd been generous in giving everybody 12 minutes to tailgate. But that's just the kind of guy I am. I'm a generous guy. Enjoy your 12 minutes of tailgate.
Thank you, and take care.
All right. Take care, my good friend. Lou Prado. Great to have him here in the Sunbury Motors studio today, talking about the history of Penn State and Pitt, as only Lou can do, because he researches all of this. He researches every inch of it. He is the author of the Penn State Football Encyclopedia. And we always turn to him whenever we need that little history lesson that I think makes it much more fun and much more entertaining. And the 99th meeting between the two. No, Lou has not seen all 99. No, I haven't seen all 99. Okay. We've seen a lot of them, but not all 99. All right. That is coming up tomorrow. So let's run down what's happening for you. Of course, the Phillies are back in action tonight as well. But we've got high school football for you on this Friday night. And our high school football matchup tonight is Shikellamy hitting the road to take on Loyal Sock this evening. Kevin Herb, Dick Hort with their award-winning broadcast. 6:30 the airtime tonight. 7 o'clock will be the kickoff. Eagle 107 with Pat O'Brien and Ryan Brandt. We'll have Selins Grove at Southern Columbia this evening. Somebody tell me how Southern Columbia is good every year. But Selins Grove has them tonight. That's on Eagle 107. Greg Wetzel and the crew on 100.9 The Valley. They've got Mount Carmel this evening, and Lewisburg will be home for that one. And then tomorrow on Eagle 107, Bucknell football over Christie, Sacred Heart and Bucknell. And we look forward, by the way, to having Joe Susan on the show on Monday. We'll talk with him. and get a recap of that game. Hopefully you can get out to Christie tomorrow and bring your radios with you so you can hear Doug Birdsong and Kevin Herr with the call here on Eagle 107. Of course, last night the Eagles won 18-12. The Steelers will be in action Sunday against the Cleveland Browns, 100.9. The Valley will have that. And, of course, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, it's going to be Penn State and Pitt tomorrow night, 6:30 the airtime. Jack Ham, Derek Williams will join me for the broadcast from Heinz Field tomorrow night, along with Roger Corey, Jeff Tarman. Yes, Ron Moeller will be there. He's still at this hour trying to convince me to play golf tomorrow before the game. My problem is, see, Jack and Ron want me to play golf with them tomorrow. I absolutely want to play golf with them tomorrow. The problem is, with the parking lots not opening until 5, my concern is getting back. That's my concern. So this is going to be a, quote, tea time, quote, game time decision coming up tomorrow. All right, but we'll make some sort of decision at some point. Maybe we'll flip a coin. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Look, you need to stock up for the weekend. This is going to be a fun weekend, I think. Fun. Wine coolers, water, soft drink snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. The bags are right there at the register. This is a really well laid out store. They'll help you bring the cases to the car and everything. And the pickle bar, yes, sometimes used to settle wagers. The pickle bar is indeed second to none, led by the barrels and the dills. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And the Steve Jones Show, I am proud to say, is driven by the great people at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Kevin and the coach, Dick Hoare, coming up tonight at 6:30 with Shikellamy playing at Loyal Sox tonight. Kickoff set for 7 o'clock. I will talk to you tomorrow in Pittsburgh with Jack Ham and Derek Williams as Penn State takes on Pitt for the 99th time and the third consecutive year. You'll hear all the coverage right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.